Okay, so the first part of my talk will just be about the model itself. I'm not sure if all of you are very familiar with the model, so I'll just spend some time discussing the model itself. And then second half of the talk will really be focused on the kind of phenomenology. So what are the particles we're going to see, what are the signals, and what are the background you might be worried about. But all this, for the moment, it's very general discussions. So we haven't done those detailed works as for, you know, pick a particular channel, work down the whole decay chain, and compare with its background and do all those cuts and optimization. We haven't done that. Actually, this is an ongoing project I'm doing with one of my students. So you won't get all those details, but you will have a big picture of, in general, for those left-right twin Higgs models, what are the signals you will be expecting at colliders. Okay, so I didn't really put any motivation here. So for this audience, it should be obvious enough, because everything starts from electroweak symmetric breakings, and then we have the Higgs, then the Higgs mass gets large corrections, and now there used to be people all talking about this large hierarchy problem of the stabilization of the Higgs mass versus the lambda square with lambda b and Planck. But most recently, people were just focusing on the little hierarchy problems, which that once you have the Higgs, its mass gets corrections, then the electroweak precision measurement pushes the new physics scale above like 10 TeVs. But on the other hand, once the new physics scale is really that big, then you will think about fine-tuning problem again. So that was a little hierarchy problem that people are talking about. And people here, like John and Xinjia, have worked quite a lot on trying to how to solve that problem. And so for the past couple of years, there has been this idea of revisiting the idea of Higgs is a pseudo-Goldstone bosons of some broken, spontaneously broken global symmetries. And from the quantum field theory, we all know that once the symmetry is spontaneously broken, the Higgs and the Goldstone boson is completely massless. So that fits well because Higgs is very light. So then if you have something which breaks the global symmetry explicitly, it will give a contribution to the Higgs mass. Then come back with the old problem again. The Higgs gets lambda square corrections. You have fine tunings. So there are different ways to solve this. One is the little Higgs mechanism, that you need some collective symmetry breakings. You need the breaking of two global symmetries simultaneously so that the lambda square term is actually absent. You only have the long lambda corrections. And then another recent idea is actually proposed by Chalkwin and his collaborators. It's called the twin Higgs mechanism. So where instead of use collective symmetry breaking, you put on some additional discrete symmetries. Mm-hmm. And that additional discrete symmetries will guarantee that the lambda square correction is absent, and you only live with the long lambda corrections. So we'll talk more detail about this just in a couple of minutes. But before that, I want to tell you that there are two different kind of twin Higgs models if you implement the twin Higgs mechanism. So the first one is actually what they originally begin with. And there, their motivation is actually to challenge the usual wisdom that people usually think, okay, whatever would protect the Higgs mass from huge corrections, you will be able to see them at LHCs. You know, if you have something to cancel the standard model top quark or gauge boson contributions, then that particles would have strong enough interaction with the standard model particle that at LHC you would definitely see them. So they just want to come up with a model which stabilizes the Higgs potentials, but still you can see nothing at LHCs. So that's kind of their own motivation beside this little hierarchy problem. So that's the mirror symmetry that the mirror twin Higgs model that they come up with. So which is that for all the standard model particles, you have a mirror partner. And standard model particle charged on the standard model SU3, SU2, and U1. And the mirror particles charged on the mirror SU3, mirror SU2, and the mirror U1. So that has nothing to do with the standard model gauge interaction, only that their gauge, the coupling strength is related by these discrete symmetries. So the coupling for the mirror sectors is exactly the same as the coupling for standard model sectors. And whatever contribution to the Higgs mass is cancelled by the lambda square term, is being cancelled by the contribution from the mirror sectors. But collider-wise, it's really very quiet, because whatever the new particle you have, it's a mirror particles. So it's only charged on the mirror symmetry, but not on the standard model symmetries. So and they only connected to the standard model by coupling to the Higgs. So collider-wise, you cannot really produce those mirror particles because they don't couple directly to the standard model quark and things like that. And also standard model particles besides the Higgs cannot really decay into those mirror particles. So collider-wise, the only signal you will hopefully see for this mirror symmetry twin Higgs model is the invisible Higgs decays. But for those of you who are familiar with the LHC physics, you would know that for the LHC, they couldn't really tell very good the invisible Higgs decay branching ratio, maybe in the order of 10% or 20%, but not really much better than that. So at LHC, you probably wouldn't see any signals for this left-right mirror model that they first proposed. So this one, you can say it's a good or bad, depending on what your preference is. Okay, but for me, that doing collider phenomenology, I don't really want to work on that model because there are not very much things to be working on. But then they were trying to, they come up with another model, so which actually use the same twin Higgs mechanism, but on the other hand, they use the left-right symmetry. They implement the whole model in the left-right models. And that one will have lots of collider signatures, and you will see a lot of new particles there. So this will be the particular one that I'll be focused on during this talk. Okay. So first of all, let's look at what is the twin Higgs mechanism. Okay. Although I present this in terms of the left-right twin Higgs model, it also works for the mirror ones. You just put whatever left-right to be the mirror ones. Okay, so we need a global symmetry. The global symmetry choose to be U4. And then you need a gauge symmetry because at the end we still want to end up with standard model gauge group. So that was SU to left times SU to right times U1. So this, it's actually exactly the same as the usual left-right model that you will be talking about. And then they need additional discrete symmetries, and this is the left-right symmetry that they're using. Whatever happens in the right sector is the same as the left sector. So for example, the gauge boson as a gauge coupling for this one is exactly the same for the gauge coupling for this one over here. And when you put your colors, you also have that kind of symmetries. So let's look at a simple example, which is for a linear realization. Okay, it's easy for you to count the number of degree freedom for the Goldstone boson if I do this, but eventually, when they put the model, they really use a nonlinear realization. And when we're doing our collider phenomenology, we also use a nonlinear realization where we only care about the Goldstone boson and we don't care about all those three real models and things like that. But for the moment, let me just use a linear realization as an example just to show you how the twin Higgs mechanism work. Okay, so we begin with the Higgs. Oh, yes, so the Higgs is different from the usual left-right model that you will be talking about. So usual one, the Higgs is a bifundamental. It's a fundamental on the SU to left and a fundamental on the SU to right. So when you write it down, it's really a 2x2 matrix. But here, it's a little bit different. It's actually a fundamental on the U4. And the up two component is charged on the SU to left, and the lower two component charged on the SU to right. So this is more or less the same Higgs representation as in the alternative left-right models. Okay, so let's begin with this. And then it will get a valve. So the lowest component here gets a valve I called F. And so far, electric hasn't been breaking yet. All we did is breaking the U4. So for the symmetry breaking pattern, the U4 down to U3, or sometimes you can just focus on the SU4. So SU4 down to SU3. And the same time, SU2 right times U1 B minus L is down to U1 1. So now you can see that after this symmetry breaking, we are back into the usual standard model gauge group over here. And because of this global symmetry broken pattern, you end up with 7 Goldstone bosons. Okay, there are 15 generators here, 8 generators over here, so you are left with 7 Goldstone bosons if it's in the usual case. But however, because the gauge symmetry is also broken here, actually not all of the Goldstone boson are the leftover Goldstone boson. Some has been got eaten. So let's see what are the Goldstone boson left over. So it turns out for the 7 of them, 4 of them sitting on in the up 2 component. And this left is really charged on the usual SU2L. So this is usual just the usual standard model Higgs doublet that's left over. And for the moment, we still haven't break the electric symmetry yet. So after you break the electric symmetry, you end up, 3 of them is eaten by WZ, and then you end up with the usual standard model Higgs. So this part is all the usual stories.
So four of them sits here, and the other three of them sits in the lower two components over there. So there's three of them, but on the other hand, when you do the symmetry breaking pattern, as you write across U1 goes to U1y, there's three gauge boson here become heavy. And it's exactly this three Goldstone boson here, which is eaten by the three gauge bosons and become its longitudinal mode. Okay, so end up after all of this, we only left this, only before electric symmetry breaking, all we left is a standard model Higgs doublet over here. So now the question comes, then we have those gauge interactions which break the global symmetries, obviously, explicitly. So it will give contribution to the Higgs mass. So how can we avoid the lambda square corrections? When you just write it down, you will actually notice you will have lambda square corrections. So when you look at the correction to the Higgs potentials, it goes like n loop factors, g squared, coming from the left, the SU to left, and then lambda square. So because it's SU to left, it only contributes to HL delta HL. You can find a almost exactly same term for the right hand, for the SU to right with the gauge coupling G right here. Okay, but so from this stage, it seems like the Higgs does get a lambda square corrections. But on the other hand, so that's where the discrete symmetry come in. So it impose this additional discrete symmetry, the left-right symmetries, so that ensures G left is equal to G right, and let me call it G. So once you do that, you can see that these two terms will come together, become G squared lambda squared. And then the other two terms will combine as HL delta HL and HR delta HR. And you can immediately notice you can write this into a form of H delta H. So once you are at this form, you will notice that this form does not break the original U4. So global symmetry is kind of restored once you require these discrete symmetries. Okay, so when you do, so because this is a term which is, does not break the original U4, it does not give a contribution to the Higgs mass. So it's only something that explicitly breaks the original U4 will contribute to the Higgs mass. But this lambda square term, once you impose these discrete symmetries, it restores the original U4, so it does not give a contribution to the Higgs mass. So that's how they protect the Higgs mass from the lambda square corrections. It's using this additional discrete symmetry that they impose to restore the original global symmetries. Okay, so if you are the fans of the little Higgs models, you want to see this explicit cancellation between two diagrams. Now, when people give the little Higgs talk, you can always see people draw two diagrams and say, okay, they cancel. And actually, same thing also happened here in the pin Higgs models. You can also do that. So you will get a correction just by the standard model gauge boson running in the loop contribution to the Higgs mass. It's proportional to GL squared. And actually, when you look at the Lagrangian careful enough, you will see that when the Higgs gets a VEF, and you can also generate a term which looks like the Higgs, the usual Higgs with the right-handed gauge boson or the heavy gauge boson here with the couplings is G right square with opposite sign, the minus sign over here. So once we impose GL is equal to G right, there's also a cancellation between these two. Okay, so if you're interested in this, I can talk to you more after talk. And the once you put the Yukawa contributions, you can also see a similar cancellation just by the loop diagram over here, but then it becomes less obvious because you need to insert a heavy top quark mass, which is proportional to y times f. Okay, so that's more detail. But anyway, so this is at Lagrangian level how you can understand that the Higgs does not get lambda square corrections, and this is really explicitly at the diagram level you can see the cancellation happens. Okay, but Higgs does get a cancellation of the order of log lambda, so which is you can just write things down. It's still the gauge couplings over loop, over a loop suppression over here, the log term HL to the fourth power and HR to the fourth power. But now you can see that even if I impose GL is equal to GL, which I already did here, so G squared, then this form is not U4 invariant. It does not preserve the original U4. The HL and HR go separate. You cannot write in terms of H to the fourth power. You cannot really do that. And so this breaks the original U4, and that's why it gives a contribution to the Higgs mass. So the Higgs mass actually goes to the order of G squared F over 4 pi, so when F is about a few TeVs, or not very few TeV, around TeV level, then you will get a Higgs mass which is naturally around a few hundred GeVs.
What prevents the HL, HR cross term at the quartic level?
That's because HL only charged under the GL. So HL only charged under GL. You couldn't really write down a diagram which will contribute
right.
to the crossing terms over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
so
each of them.
Impossible mix.
Yeah,
the
no, they can.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So once we have so that is for the gauge coupling, the gauge contribution. Then you know that usually there's a large contribution coming from the top quark. So let's also put fermion in and see if everything we discussed before also survives. So you need to put in a fermion sectors, and so this is the same as usual, but now the right-handed ones need to be grouping together, which transforms as a fundamental on the SU2 right. And the neutrino, this is same as the usual lepton sector, the left-handed ones. But you can see that I need to introduce additional right-handed neutrinos so that it groups together with the E-right and also transform fundamental as fundamental on the SU2-right. Okay, and then for those, you can actually write out non-renormalizable operators which give a mass to the leptons, to the first two-generation quarks, and to the bottom quark. And the effective, you cover coupling with to the order of F over lambda. And we know that those will be small enough, so that seems, so far seems good for those light quarks and the leptons. But however, that doesn't work for the top quark, because we need to get an order of one, you cover coupling for the top quark. And if I just write a non-renormalizable operator, the cover is too small. So to do that, it's also the usual technique, you introduce additional two heavy tops. So those are singulate on the SU2 left and the SU2 right. And this comes with a pair. So one is the left, one is the right one. And once you do that, you can write down your Yukawa terms like this. So the T left grouped together with the Q right, which has the standard model top quark. And then it puts together with HR dagger. So you will see that once this one gets above F, it will give a large top quark mass in the order of y times f. So y is kind of the usual you cover, so it's to the order of 1. And then you can also write down a similar term. So this one really should be y right, and this one should be y left. Okay, so this one couple this t right with the standard model t left, and the couple to the standard model Higgs doublet. So when this one gets above v, you will get a standard model top quark mass to the order of y times v. Okay? But however, nothing forbids you to write down a mixing term of T left and T right. So I call this coefficient to be M here. And this M, it gets constraints from precision measurement, because if you look at the YBB couplings, it will get contribution from top quark running the loop. So if you have a large, if the M becomes too big, you will get a correction to the ZBB coupling, which is too big. So this M cannot be too big. But on the other hand, nothing forbids, so this is only a term which is allowed by the symmetry, but you can also just put M equal to 0, assuming you can do that. And then
the
there's
question,
no mixing between
the
two.
What forbids HR, QR, TR?
HR,
QR, TR.
The U1B minus L doesn't really work out. And the HR, QR with TR, then the Lorentz doesn't work out. I mean, the left has to come together with right ones when you write on a Yukawa interaction.
You mean just for a mass term, to be a mass term, that's true.
Yeah, but once you have a left-handed guy, left-handed fermion over there, it kind of, actually this term I write on does not, okay, the exact form is not like this. It's actually Q alpha, sorry about that. It's actually Q alpha with HL with some kind of, and sometimes you need to put in tau 2 over there, or sigma 2 to make the SU2 to be right. But once, so these two, it should just be Q alpha, Q alpha and Q alpha. But you can't really put a QR with a TR, both of them has a PR over there. So this,
oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the wrong form. Sorry about that. It should be a bar here and the
no,
move
okay.
each other.
No, okay.
Yeah. But anyway, so that will be a term you put down. But we can see from here, if the Higgs gets above, this one gets above F, this one gets above V, and if you write down, you can write down the 2x2 mass matrix. And if the M is non-zero, then you have the mixing together. Then you just diagonalize them, get a mass eigenstate. But end up, we will have a standard model top quark and another heavy top to the mass to the order of V times F, Y times F. Okay.
But on the other hand, when you need to take into account all those electric precision measurements. And once you do that, it turns out that the gauge boson mass will need to be high. And the gauge boson mass is usually G times F, to the order of G times F. So which means F should be large, usually larger than 2 keV, or things like that. But once F gets large, the same F goes to the mass of the heavy top over here. Then you look at the contribution of this to the Higgs mass, then you actually get relatively big fine-tuning again, because the Y is to the order of 1 here, unlike the gauge coupling is kind of small. So to fix that, what they did is they introduced another Higgs field, just like the one we had before. The only difference is that Higgs only coupled to the gauge boson and does not couple to the fermions. Okay, so in that sense, that one can get a much larger valve, which gives the gauge boson a larger mass. But on the other hand, the top here still gets a mass to the order of Y times F, but in that case, the F could be small, because electric precision will just push up the other F, but not this F over here. So I will show you explicitly how that will be realized just in the next transparencies. So you might wonder, can we really do that? Okay, in order to ensure that the Higgs only coupled to the gauge boson, not coupled to the top side, you kind of need to introduce another kind of discrete parity, like matter parity or things like that, but they will be able to do that in their model. Okay, so this is what we have before, and now let's see what happens when we put another Higgs. So the other Higgs looks very much like the original Higgs. I call this hat. It also has HL hat and HR hat over here. And then the HR hat will get a valve F2, and F2 is much, much bigger than F1. So both of them couple to the gauge sectors, which means when the gauge boson here gets heavy, it will get contribution to the order of GF1. It will also get contribution to the order of GF2. And because F2 is much, much bigger, that will satisfy all the electric precision constraints. But then this F1 here will be able to remain small so that the heavy top will not upset the Higgs potentials. But now, once we have that, let's analyze what symmetry breaking patterns and what are the Higgs bosons that's left over. So now we have U4 times U4 because we have this additional one, and it's breaking down to U3 times U3. The gauge sector is still like that, the symmetry breaking pattern. Previously, we have 7 gauge bosons, 7 Goldstone bosons, now we have 14 Goldstone bosons. So 8 of them sits on the top 2 component, and the 6 of them sits in the lower 2 component. Let's first look at the one sitting in the lower. So 3 of them coming from here, 3 of them coming from here. And turns out, actually, the combination of these two, 3 of them is eaten by the heavy gauge bosons, the heavy W and heavy Zs coming from here. But however, we still have 3 physical degree of freedom left over. So one of them is neutral, and then a pair of charge guys. So we have additional neutral one. I call this Higgs just because it's a scalar. You can also call this additional neutral scalar, additional charge scalar over here. And then this one here, same as before, we still have a standard model Higgs doublet left over, become the standard model Higgs at the end. But then from here, we have additional SE2L Higgs doublet left over. I call this H1 and H2. And then remember, this guy, by my constructions, it's coupled to gauge boson only. Okay, so this one, unlike the standard model Higgs, it's coupled to all the tops and the bottom and things like that. So this one only coupled to gauge boson, does not couple to the fermions. And this is protected by additional kind of matter parity that you'll be able to put in into your models. And these two guys, especially the neutral ones, would be a very good dark matter candidate. And I will talk more about these neutral guys later on. But anyway,
H20 complex.
Yes, both of them are complex. The complex field also here, because
it's a pseudo scalar.
Yeah.
Scalar
hidden. Exactly. Yeah. So, given that, let's see what are the new particles and what are the mass of them and what are the parameters in the models. So first of all, you have those heavy gauge bosons coming from SU2Y times U1 breaking U1 B minus L breaking down to U1Y. So mass is to the order of G square, mass square, F1 square plus F2 square, but most of the time it's dominated by this F2 over here. Then you have this heavy top, and if mass is mostly Y times F1, you will have some small contribution from a non-zero M square.
And then you have the standard model Higgs, which I didn't list here because I only want to list the new particles. And you will see in my next transparency, its mass is actually restricted to a quite narrow regions. Okay, but then we have those additional Higgs. So first of all, the charged ones. Its mass, just like the usual Higgs, it will get those gate corrections from the gauge couplings and the Yukawa couplings over here. So for example, here, write down one terms like this. Okay, and it's proportional to loop order over here, F2 squared, and also log lambda term. And then this guy over here, actually turns out when you look at the Higgs potentials and when you look at the symmetry group of the models, there's additional global U1 which is left over unbroken. And this additional global U1 protects this mass to become massless. But on the other hand, this guy over here, coupled to other fermions, things like that, and the experimental already kind of rules out a massless neutral scalar particle over here. So in order to fix this problem, what they did is they can add additional terms in the Lagrangian, kind of like a new term. Okay, it's BHR dev HR hat. And then when you write out in terms of the phi zero, it gives a mass to the phi zero to the order of BF2 over F1. But on the other hand, once you write down this term, you can also see it will have a corresponding term in the left sectors, HL dagger and HL hat. And if that term is allowed, then it will cause a mixing between HL hat and HL hat and HL, so that will make the dark matter to be unstable in the decay because the original H over there coupled to all the fermions. So if you still want your model to have a good dark matter candidate, you want to forbid that term. So if that term is gone, then you kind of break the original discrete symmetries softly. Okay, so if you just break it softly, it's actually okay. It won't give a contribution to the Higgs mass too big. So this B here, you would want this to be the order of F4 over here. And in the real case, it's actually enough for this B to be small that give it a mass to be above the current experimental limit. So in our analysis below, we just put it to be square root B to be the order of 50 to 100 GeVs.
So how is it coupled at lost track to the standard model of particles? It's SU2R, so you would think maybe it wasn't coupled very strongly, but it's coupled to the W.
Yeah, because
point. So
yeah, this one, it's so actually in this phi zero and the phi plus mass, it's a mixture coming from the HR and HR hat. And the original, let me see. Yeah, okay. So this guy here, coupled to all the standard model fermions over here, and this one doesn't. But the mixture of these two become phi zero and the phi plus minus. So these two would actually have non-suppressed coupling to the standard model fermions. But on the other hand, it's again proportional to the Yukawas. I mean, the other coupling to the fermion proportional to Yukawa. So the largest coupling is actually goes to third generations. For example, this guy could decay into BB bar, and this guy could decay into TBs, and things
so
like that.
So you can't arrange it so that there's no mixing, is my question, I guess.
Actually, you can. It's in the limit of M goes to zero. And I'll talk about that later. When M really goes to zero, the kind of phenomenology become very different.
Right.
And
okay,
actually become very difficult.
I guess that's the thing that I'm missing. So it's that capital M that you can't forbid for anything.
Right. Yeah, that one kind of, you have to put it over there. It's not forbidden by any gauge symmetry. But once you put it over there, there's a mixture.
Right,
yeah,
I see that. Yeah.
Okay. So then there's this extra kind of complex field which is charged under SU2L. And these two would get a usual contribution from the common Weinberg Higgs potentials, only from the gauge sector because they don't couple to the fermion sectors. So you'll be fine with that. But on the other hand, for those of you who want to have this model to have this good dark matter candidates, you kind of want to give this additional freedom so that it can vary its mass freely so you could get the right rack density at the end. But this is just the extra features if you do want that. So if you do want that, you want to give additional mass correction to that. So what they do is you can add additional mass term, kind of goes like this. So this will contribute to the Higgs mass for both of them if you write those things out in terms of those component fields over there. But on the other hand, you can see that this one also softly breaks the left-right discrete symmetry that we originally imposed. But it's also a soft symmetry breaking, so that's actually okay, and it could be to the order of F1. So this parameter will enter in if we calculate the rack densities of the H20 over there, and you can vary this parameter so that you get the right relic densities later on. Okay, so those are the new particles. Extra gauge boson, extra top quark, additional set of Higgs over there. So at least if you just look at these two, it looks quite much like the little Higgs model. So you have those extra heavy gauge bosons and the heavy tops. But turns out it's quite different from the little Higgs model, at least from the little Higgs models. So let's see what are the model spectrum in this model, as a model parameters and also spectrum of the particles. So F1 is obviously a parameter, it's a wave of the Higgs, and also F2 is a wave of the other Higgs, but turns out these two are not independent, because once you fix F1, you have to decide your values of F2, because you want to make sure that the standard model Higgs gets the usual wave, the wave of 246 GeV. So you want to make sure that. So that will fix the value of F2 once the F1 is given. And then you also have this top Yukawa, but that one is mostly fixed by the standard model top quark mass. Then you have the cutoff scale lambda, and most of the time you can choose lambda to be 4 pi times F or 2 pi times F. Then you have this the mixing between the extra top quark that you introduced the value of M. It could be set into 0, but otherwise it will be there. You have this parameter square root B, which just as I mentioned in the previous transparency, it's put there so that makes sure I don't have any axions in the model. The phi 0 gets a mass. And then this mu here, which is to give the dark matter a mass. So this particular parameter is not so relevant collider-wise, because turns out those dark matter stuff, you couldn't really see them at colliders. It's weak coupling enough. Okay, so these two plots actually give the mass spectrum in the model. So let's look at left one first. X-axis.
Can I ask another
sure.
question?
Sure.
If you have this non-zero M, is WLWL unitarity still okay? Because you've introduced you fixed up one sector so that it's standard model-like, but then this M causes some mixing of other things into the normal WL. So
right.
So doesn't that screw up unitarity for W scattering?
So you mean when the M is non-zero?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but actually this M itself is already constrained by other measurements like the ZBB couplings. So that will constrain M to be not too big.
Right, so it's a quantitative question.
Right, yeah, so that one
can
have an analyzer.
Whether or not unitarity gets
screwed
up before scale F or wherever you want to set the scale.
But on the other hand, you can just keep M to be very small if there's some strong constraint from unitarity.
Right.
So we haven't analyzed that, and actually I don't think anyone has analyzed that.
Right.
But if this becomes a trouble, just keep M to be kind of small. Nothing wrong with set M to be zero. You can just set M to be exactly zero. Okay?
Because there's no discrete symmetry that does that.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Could you have a symmetry, an additional discrete symmetry that flips the sign of every right-handed field but not the sign of the left-handed fields? Does that screw up this scheme?
I'm not sure about that one. Yeah, I don't think...
Because that would forbid such a term.
Yeah, you might be able to add additional discrete symmetry so that you can make sure M is exactly zero. It forbids that mixture term. But then you'll be able to arrange the charge of all those fields on the additional discrete symmetry, and you need to look at Lagrangian to see whether it's allowed or not, whether this additional. So that I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
You have a question?
Yeah, about the electrolytic symmetry breaking, you have nothing at three levels, right? All the potential
Everything is group generated.
So how can, maybe I just don't remember, how can you get natural electrolytic symmetry breaking without any three level?
Oh, just to look at the gauge interaction in the Yukawas expressly break the U4. So it will give a contribution to the Higgs potential, and you will look at the gauge contribution and the Yukawa contribution. Most likely it's the Yukawa contributions, which will make sure the Higgs will get a valve.
Yeah, it gets a valve, but I was thinking that the quadratic term will be something like F square log, where times some coupling, times some root factor. The quartic will be log.
Yeah.
And so the valve is naturally over the F, which is...
No, not really. You need to... Turn out in the... So that goes into the original papers and
and
they just need to look at the common Weinberg potential and see if there is a minimal in the potential, and there is, turned out.
Yeah, there is, but
yeah.
Isn't it away from
No. It can make it to be 246 GeV, but again, that needs kind of, it also needs kind of fine-tuning, but not as bad as in standard model. So, for example, if you pick F to be 500 GeV, the number of fine-tuning they introduced is like 20% fine-tuning. So that's much better than a standard model where you need a 50% fine-tuning over there. Okay? So you can do that. But anyway, as far as the cloudy phenomenology goes, so this is what matters. So we need to find out what the mass of those guys and how their coupling goes and things like that. So this plot gives the mass of all those heavy guys. X-axis is F1, and the y-axis gives various heavy gauge bosons, heavy double, heavy top, and F2. So I'm just here to show you what the value of F2 would be. Solid line is for lambda is 4 pi F, but some people also prefer lambda to be 2 pi F.
Why is that exactly?
Oh, the second is the lambda is...
Why 2 pi F?
Oh, the 2 pi F, well, is that if you really think about the UV completions, if you take some considerations of the unitarity or whatever, then some people will prefer lambda.
So if you do an explicit unitarity calculation, then you get some factor that's, you know, two to five or something like that.
Right.
Is there a reason to choose exactly two, or is it just some arbitrary choice?
No, it's just some arbitrary choice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in our case, if you vary the value of to lambda to between 2 pi or 4 pi F, it doesn't really change the result that much. So I'm just here to show how the consequences will be, but it's just be a few hundred GeV changing in the mass of it. It doesn't really matter. Okay. So first of all, let's look at the heavy top mass. It's kind of between 500 to 1 TeV. So that's good, which means it's within the accessibility of the LHCs. And then the heavy gauge bosons are heavy because this guy is controlled by Y times F1. And these two is controlled by gauge coupling times F2. And because F2 is much heavier than the F1, as it's constrained by the electric precision measurement. So the mass of WZ is kind of getting very big. Okay, it's to the order of like 1 TeV to 4 TeVs. But on the other hand, we will look at that later. It will be Joyon produced at LHCs, and then you look at various decays. So it will be possible to find those guys also at LHCs. And you can see if I change the lambdas over here, the value, because F2 will be changed correspondingly, so the value of WZ and WH and ZH will be changed. But however, this guy, the heavy top, is controlled by F1, so it doesn't change when I vary the lambda, the cutoff lambda over here. And another thing you can notice that from here, it's obvious the heavy W is heavier than the heavy top. It's kind of the opposite in the little Higgs, or at least the little Higgs bubble, no better. The heavy top is heavier than the heavy W over here, so the spectrum here is kind of different. And so this right plot here gives a various Higgs mass as a function of F1. So first, the red one. So red one is really the standard model Higgs. And turns out, if you look at the physical Higgs mass of a standard model Higgs coming from the minimization of common Weinberg potential and calculate what the Higgs mass is, it's in a narrow region of between 150 to 170 GeVs. It doesn't go very small, it doesn't go very large. It's kind of being restricted to around that region over there. And that will be the case where people usually refer to as intermediate Higgs mass, in a kind of within that, where the WWZZ branch ratio start to catch up. And when it's really above 2MZ, then it can decay into ZZ, which is quite good. Okay, then the very light blue line over here shows the mass of the phi zero, so the neutral one that we just gave. But this is because I put a value for square root b to be 50 GeV. It's an additional parameter that we put in. So it will change if I change the value of square root b. It's roughly just proportional to it. Okay. And then this green line over here, it's a mass of the charged Higgs over here. It gets its contribution. It gets a small contribution from the square root b term, but mostly it gets its contribution from the common Weinberg potential. It's in the order of 200 to 400 GeV. So depending on how it decays, we might be able to see these guys at LHCs. And then this red, this blue one here, it's really kind of not so relevant for collider studies. And its mass is controlled by this additional parameter mu that we put in. And when I generate in this plot, I force mu to be F1 over 2. So that's why you will see this linear dependence. But really, it doesn't have to be like that. Mu is only required to be order of F1. It does not really have to be this relation over here. So you can think of the mass of those would-be dark matter candidates to kind of a free parameter over there. Okay? So given that, we can now go ahead and analyze the different heavy particle we have, how it's produced and how it's get decayed and how much is the cross-section, things like that. So let's first look at the heavy top, because that one seems to be the one that will be easily discovered. You can write down a diagram that contributes to the top production. And that one, it's similar to the little Higgs in the sense that the single production actually dominates. The blue curve here gives the single heavy top productions, and the red ones give the usual QCD pair productions. And because this one is kind of suppressed by the phase space because the heavy top gets large, so the single one dominates. But on the other hand, it's different from the little Higgs models in that the S-channel unshell WH production with its decay into TH will dominate, because in our case, WH is heavier than the TH, so it can be unshell produced and then decay. This one actually dominates over the cross sections, but unlike the little Higgs models, where the T channel W exchange will dominate. Okay, in our case, that contribution is really kind of small because the TH in the limit of M goes to zero is only coupled to WH, does not couple to W. So that's suppression, and it's proportional to M. And when we take M to be kind of small, this WBTH coupling is kind of small, which suppresses its contributions. But if you look at the numerical numbers, when the mass is about 500 GeV, it's to the order of like 10 fact bonds. The numbers is actually very close to the little Higgs models, if you just compare with our papers. So the exact, so numerically, you will see that we have large cross section to produce those heavy top. Then the next question so comes naturally, once it's produced, how it's get decayed and what other channel you're going to use to actually find those. So this part here gives the decay branching ratio for the heavy top. You can see that it actually mostly decays into B5 plus minus because it's proportional to the Yukawa couplings. And even M goes to zero, this one here goes to non-zero. Okay, so this is a very large a decay branching ratio into this one. And then there's some small branching fractions which decay into various gauge bosons with Higgs and things like that. And this actually is proportional to the value of M. So when we really set M goes to zero, all those will disappear. But on the other hand, you will still see that there's this relation between the branching ratio of heavy top goes to BW versus the branching ratio of heavy top goes to TZ and TH. So that is the same as the little Higgs model. You still have this 2-1-1 ratio over there. But for the little Mr. Higgs, that's the only decay channel that TH will be, so experimentally you can just go ahead and measure those. If it's 50%, 25%, 25%, okay, that's good. In our case, the branch ratio is kind of small, which made it hard to really measure those and to test the Goldstone boson series.
But on the other hand, your signal is also produced on resonance.
Yeah.
You get more signal.
Yeah, right, that's true. Yeah, but if you really look at the cross sections, it's kind of the same as the little Higgs models. So if we pick that one over there and develop a decay chain, so let's see what that signal we're going to see. So single heavy top productions goes to, so almost 100% goes to B with this charge one. And this charge one, as I will mention later, it actually 100% goes into B and T. Okay, it might go to the toss, but this one is still much larger. It's proportional to top you cover. And then it follows as usual, T goes to BW, and the W could decay leptonically or hydronically, but here you can see all the others are jets, so we would actually prefer a W decay leptonically to give us this the triggers to trigger on this event to have a energetic leptons. So the thing that you will see is 3B jets plus additional jets, which are most likely to be the B jets also, and then plus lepton plus missing energies. There's quite a lot of standard model background you need to worry about. For example, the TT bar productions, which goes to BBWW, then one W leptonically, the other one hydronically. So that one you need to worry about. And also maybe a W with two jets production, W with three jets production, things like that. So that will be the background for that one over there. So for the moment, we haven't really do the... we are doing the analysis of a detailed analysis as for how to choose a cutoff, all those things. means how to use the reconstructions of the W top and the 5 plus minus here to be able to cut down the background and things like that. And so far, I'm quite confident that we should be able to use appropriate cut to distinguish this one from the usual standard model background over there. Because there was an LHC group, I think it's Atlas, did a similar studies for the little Higgs models for the single heavy top reductions. And there they show that you actually for their top quark mass is actually larger than ours, and they show that you can do all those cut stuff to actually find out the signal over the background. So we are doing the analysis for the moment to see whether that channel is possible. But on the other hand,
is each of your decays on shell?
Most, yes. All those decays are on shell.
Can the heavier than the...
Yeah, it is. The fire is usually
Lighter than the top.
Yeah, the fire is usually like 200 to 400 GeV. So it's all those on-shell particle decay. So that means we can really use a reconstruction to see the invariant mass and the cut on that, so be able to pick out the signals of that. But if you don't want to look at a final state with four jets, maybe you can use a small branch ratio over there with the cleaner signals, you know, be with. So this is more or less like the single top production in the standard model will be a background over there. So this one will have the less signals, but we haven't analyzed the background yet, so I'm not sure how this channel will be promising or not. But there's this additional channel over here, TZ, where you can look at the trilepton signals. So that one really have almost no standard model background if you look at trilepton, but on the other hand, the signal is kind of really suppressed over here. So we haven't done all those details for those suppressed branching ratio, and we are working on this one right now. Heavy gauge bosons, Joule-Young production, just as usual. The red one is for the heavy W, and the green one is for the heavy Zs. So the cross-section is actually, the Ws will be exactly the same as the little Higgs ones, given it's a function of the mass, because it's just the usual U decoupled to W and things like that. The Zs, heavy Zs will be slightly different because it really depends on what's the coupling of Zs. It's kind of the SU2 right group coupling, and you can work out the quantum numbers. But anyway, it's again to the order of like peak bound level or tensor peak bound level when the mass is big and then kind of goes down. So again, the question is how those guys decay. It's kind of quite complicated. So I show the ZH over here. So first of all, there's one thing I haven't mentioned, the right-hand neutrinos. Okay, the decay of Z and the W depends on how heavy the right-hand neutrino is. And turns out the right-hand neutrino, first of all, in this model, we can write down a non-renormalizable operator, which gives a large mass to the right-hand neutrino, so we can push that one out of the spectrum. Don't need to worry about that. On the other hand, there are also constraints on the right-hand neutrino mass. No, it's actually on the W and the Z, W boson mass. Because, okay, there's this constraint from supernovae cooling. If the right-hand neutrino mass is less than the proton mass, then you will have very strong constraint from the supernovae, so that it pushes the WH mass to be above like 10 TeV or 20 TeVs. So we don't want that constraint to be that strong. In that sense, you just need to push up the right-hand neutrino mass to be larger than proton mass, which is very easy to do. Okay? So that one is kind of the strongest constraint over there. So for the moment, I just assume my right-hand neutrino is really heavy, then I don't need to worry about that. But on the other hand, you can push it to be light, as long as it's larger than proton mass, which is only 1 GeV, so it will be fine. So for the moment, there's no right-hand neutrinos. And this L plus L minus ones, it will give us a very nice peak if you just follow its decay spin, pick two leptons, and construct the invariant mass of that. So this is a conventional way to look for that. And for these two, it's not so helpful. It's just all jets final states. You might have huge background from the LHCs. But you might also be able to use the decay to have a top or the decay into pair of the top quark. For example, I can use the usual just the top quark pair production looking for a heavy resonance, which decay into pair of top quark. You can look at those final states. So this particular channel actually has been analyzed, for example, in the Atlas TDI report. And it's quite promising to be able to find a ZH up to like 3 TeV or 4 TeVs. Just by looking at this pair of top quark production, you can look at the standard model TTBAR background and get rid of that by doing certain cuts. Okay? WH. It would be relatively easy to find a WH if it could decay into L and a new R. So that analysis has been done. And in our case, again, I assume the right-hand neutrino is very heavy, so I don't have that.
Then you will see that I have the others decay into jets, which is not so useful. But on the other hand, I can look at the decay into THB is kind of big. It's an angel decay. You can actually see this kind of decay already in the single top productions. So depending on how the heavy tops, which decays, it will go into all those final states as I just mentioned. Okay, but all of those, for those you will see, you will typically have a lot of B jets in the final states. So you might be able to use the B taggings to suppress some of the backgrounds. But on the other hand, once you use B tagging, sometimes you will lose like 60% to 70%. It's the efficiency of it's a B tagging efficiency problems. Okay, but anyway, it will be nice if the WH will be discovered in these TH decay channels. But on the other hand, I think it's possible because just like when I talk about heavy top, it's actually the analysis that we are doing right now to find the single heavy top production. It's more or less a single heavy top production with an on-shell WH decay over
just
here.
Just to comment real quick mm-hmm. about the top decay mode, I think that's probably more promising than the other ones because you've got five on-shell mm-hmm. particles.
Right.
So you've got five constraints.
Yeah,
you've got five unknowns.
All the way
before
back.
There's one unknown.
Yeah.
And five constraints. So the problem is strongly overconstrained by looking at the differential cross section.
Yeah. Right. And also we only have one. The missing energy is only coming from one neutrino. It's not like a pure production of the missing energy. So
yeah. But
yeah.
I mean, you could pick one of your constraints, say the W mass, and use that to solve for the neutrino.
Right. Exactly. So that one will be completely reconstructed.
You know everything.
Yep. We just need to work out all the details. But in principle, I think it's quite doable.
Higgs, okay, standard model Higgs, it's in the region of 150 to 170 GeVs, and this is kind of the one which is quite good because you can decay into ZZ or ZZ star depending on what exactly the mass of H is, and for lepton ones, just the WW star goes to two lepton missing energy, or even use the Gauge boson fission stuff, so Jack here will be able to tell me more about that, but otherwise, a Higgs in that region will be quite easy to be found at LHC, so I won't say more about that. How about those other neutron charge ones? And turns out there we might have some challenge over there. Decay.
Are there some invisible modes that aren't listed there, or the Higgs is only decaying to the usual visible channels?
Higgs usually just decaying to the usual visible channels.
Everything is heavy.
Yeah.
All the invisible.
Yeah. All the new particles that have there, unless the Higgs will go into those like 5-0 ones, but those couplings are usually quite small. And the decay of these extra Higgs is very simple. This guy is mostly just decaying to BB bar or tau bar. I haven't shown the tau here yet. And the 5 plus minus will just decay into TBs.
It's really narrow.
Yes, it's a narrow, especially for this one over here. It's a very narrow width. This one will highly depend on the exact value of M, okay, as I'll tell you later on. So then the question is, how those guys get produced? Okay, you can think of gluon fusion just as in the usual Higgs case, but in the usual Higgs, at least we can use Higgs goes to photon, for example, to pick out that channel. And here, it most just decay into almost 100% decay into BBs, huge QCD background. It's probably not so possible to find it through this channel. And you can think of those associated production with WZs, but turns out, unlike the standard model Higgs, if you look at the Lagrangian, there's no such coupling at three levels. So can that even be produced associated with WZ? Then you think about associated production with third generation quarks and things like that. Turns out cross section is really small. So the direct production of those guys does not seem very you can still gluon fusion, but on the other hand, QCD background is kind of overwhelming. Okay, then you might think of ways, since we have all those heavy particles in the model, how about it's coming from the decay of those heavy particles? And turns out it's possible. So here I show the cross sections of the 5-0 production through all those heavy particle decays. The largest one coming from this, the WH decay into that, but still there, the cross-section is kind of below one peak bounce, and you still need to struggle with this background issues of a relatively long decay chain. Okay, but on the other hand, all those particles, again, are just on-shell particles, so you might be able to do some reconstruction of the events to be able to tell this one from the background. Okay, so that part of the Higgs analysis we haven't really done yet, and actually we're not thinking of doing it for the near future. It's kind of, it's not really a kind of smoking gun signal for this kind of model, so I'll just leave it there, just show you what's a cross-section and things like that. 5 plus minus, turned out this one,
all the problem phi zero have goes to the 5 plus minus, doesn't even have the gluon fusion productions, and the direct production is kind of small, but on the other hand, the production from the heavy particle decay is actually larger, because it's coming from the heavy top decays. Remember, the heavy top decay almost 100 into the phi and the b's. So the cross-section is actually kind of big, and the signal is, again, the same as the things that I just told you. You actually see this one for the third time now. It's a single top production goes to phi, but if we go back to all those decay chains, you'll be able to reconstruct the phi plus minus in the middle, so that'll be able to tell you what's the mass of those and things like that. And these two, yeah. So those are the ones that's coupled to the gauge boson only, does not couple to the fermions. And turns out, if you work things out, this additional kind of parity you put in to make sure that it doesn't couple to fermions also make the neutral ones to be stable. So these two mass are very close to each other. There's small splitting caused by the electromagnetic contributions, but this neutral one is the light ones, as we would hope. And so, collider-wise, it depends on how this guy decays into that one over here. If the decay lifetime is relatively long, it's actually good news, because you can just look at it for a check in the detector. But on the other hand, most likely, the decay will be quick enough so that you only see missing energies, and there's nothing even for you to trigger on. So I wouldn't think this one will have too much hopes to be discovered at LHCs, but on the other hand, this H20 is a very good dark matter candidate. And for the moment, I'm doing this analysis with one of my other students to see whether in the natural region of the primary space, without doing too much finding, without like happen to be near a mass trail or a mass pole or things like that, see if it can give the right rack densities. And at least our preliminary results show that, yes, you can. You can just, also, the current results from the rack density does constrain you to a very small primary space. But on the other hand, that is not fine-tuning. It's not like I happen to go through a pole or something that I need to be fine-tuning to be near that pole. It's kind of just in the natural region of the primary space it could appear. And because these two masses are really close to each other, then you need to consider the co-annihilations and things like that. So we do take all those into account, and we find the rack densities, and now we are also looking at the direct and the indirect detection rates for this particular H20 over here. So as I promised you, I would say something about M equals to zero. Usually when that goes to here, I have 0 minutes left. Okay, so M goes to zero. There's basically no mixing between standard model top and the heavy tops. And because there's no mixing zero, you can look at the couplings, and the sum of them goes to exactly zero. So all the red cross over there are the one that goes to zero. In particular, gauge couplings. Heavy W only coupled to heavy top, light W only coupled to light top. There's no mixture. For the Z couplings, there's no mixture. Again, it will only couple to pair of top or pair of heavy top. And in particular, and there's also some kind of Yukawa coupling goes to zero. In particular, I want to point this one out. So 5 plus minus TB coupling. This coupling is proportional to M. So it previously gave me this decay of 5 plus minus goes to TBs, which is kind of the only decay channel. Or it could decay into tau also, but otherwise this will be the only decay channel that it gives. So when M goes to zero, this coupling here goes to zero, which means this decay cannot happen. So but lots of the process that I just showed you would involve this particle in the middle, involve this decays. So if this doesn't happen, how this guy decays? Turns out it cannot decay into two-body final state, it could decay into three-body final states through an off-shell W. But you can see there's huge. So this is for usual M equal to 150 GeV, this is for M equal to zero. So there's a huge difference in the decay rate. And also you can look at the decay branching ratio, which are given over there. The one have the large branching ratios has big QCD background, because it all involves phi zero. Phi zero decay into BB bars. Huge QCD background. And then the one involved Higgs, it can have some leptonic final states, but on the other hand, the branching ratio is suppressed to be less than 1%. So small signals. And this same pattern will actually follow to all the other particles that I mentioned previously. You either suppress from huge QCD background or the leptonic signal is kind of small. So we actually did go through all of those. We look at the decay of these guys, the production and the decay of those guys.
you have that problem, but I guess I have to ignore off, to quickly skip all those. And for the 5-0 we have, turns out it can only be produced through the WHDK or the ZHDKs, but then when you look at the final states, it's kind of become very difficult. So it's the same thing, either very difficult because of the huge QCD background or the signal is very small. So the same thing happens, or heavy top becomes very, so all those will be absent. And this one goes to 100% because all those coupling goes to zero. But then it will highly depend on this 5 plus minus decay. So what I said before about 5 plus minus will apply here. Huge QCD background or small signal. The only exception, the only good exception is for the ZH, because previously we can look at this through the electronic decay of ZH. So that one does not get affected, okay? It's just the usual ZH decays over there. So the ZH will be still good, but on the other hand, WH, if it does not decay into lepton plus right and neutrinos, then you can go through each individual one and you will find out the same problem appears. So for m equal to 0, the discovery of almost all those particles become very difficult, except for the ZH. It all roots back to the 5 plus minus decays that we will highly rely on if m is not equal to 0. Okay, so since I used all my time, okay, so I have kind of tell you what are the twin Higgs mechanism, how to implement this into the left-right models as explicit examples. And the Higgs and pseudo-Goldstone bosons and the lambda square corrections is forbidden by impose additional discrete symmetry which will restore the original global symmetries. There are quite a lot of new particles here, and for the case of M non-zero, you have a very rich collider phenomenology. It's a lot of new particles, new signals, and you can really just work on the detail of that to find out the LHC potentials in discovering those particles. But on the other hand, when M is non-zero, as I just mentioned, it becomes very difficult, at least for the moment, for all those things that we have investigated. You might be able to find a good channel, which it's not, but most likely it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. There's quite a lot of future work that we can do, and the one that we are working on now is to pick a particular channel, for example, heavy top, and compare with the background, see if we can do any cuts to find out what's the LHC potential and discover those guys. And another thing is that you can do the dark matter studies, as we are also doing now, find out what's the region that gives the right rank densities and how possible we can find those in those dark matter detections later on. And then you can also try to identify the twin Higgs mechanism, just like people did in the Little Higgs case, try to identify the Little Higgs mechanism to see experimentally if it's possible to measure those coupling, measure those mass, to determine what the F is and things like that, to see if the relation that you have to satisfy does satisfy. So that would, it's something for the future work, and also you can compare with other models, like Little Higgs model, with also those heavy W and heavy top stuff, and to see if it's possible experimentally to distinguish those. So at least for the Little Higgs model, it's quite obvious. But then you might have other branches of Little Higgs model, or even in general, those two Higgs W models, which also have 5-0, 5-plus-minus, and you can see whether you'll be able to distinguish that from this particular model that I have been talking about. Okay, thank you.
So one more question on this M. At what point numerically do you start to get into trouble being able to see the rich collider phenomenology associated with M not equal?
Yeah, it's really a point of, let me show you this part, this one over here. It's really a sense of comparing the three-body decay with the two-body decay with a very small value of M. So I did that for M equal to 1 GeV, for example, you should think that would be small enough. And in that case, even in that case, the two-body one would dominate. And you need really to kind of push M to be very small so that this three-body one will start to show up. So I would basically say, unless you just put exactly M equal to 0, otherwise it's protected by some kind of discrete symmetry or something like that. Otherwise, you will be fine.
So is M going to be generated by anything? Say QCD, which would give it a value around 100 MeV at the smallest?
It could be,
idea, because it's just a TL bar TR term, and they could, if you don't have any good reason, any symmetry to forbid that, in general, it could be generated by higher order corrections.
So then I guess the question would be, at 100 MeV for M, is the two-body still dominant?
Right, yeah, but that, it's a very easy numerical analysis you can do. It's just two-body gates proportional to M or something like that, or M to certain powers. You can easily compare this with the three-body over here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes? Which discrete symmetry are you talking about?
So
it's a GL to G, right?
So there should be quadratic edges?
No, the electric symmetry breaking doesn't really. It only happens in the left hand side. No, it doesn't really affect that. The GL is just equal to GL.
Is it SU, U2?
No, by that time the SU2i is already kind of broke. In the beginning, when they have the first valve, we already kind of break the SU2i with that. You only require GL is equal to GS, but you can do further things later. I don't think it will break that.
So I'm not
sure
why the ideal will not get nice.
Look at the global symmetries in the Lagrangian tunnel. There's actually U1, which is kind of left over, which is guaranteed. And the fact there is a neutral guy over there, which kind of guarantees this fact to be exactly massless. If you just analyze the global symmetry in that models, yeah.
Thanks.